Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Today's show, which basically deals with metaphysics and spirituality, has in its title something dealing with that. We are going to deal with the question of prophecy versus spiritual timing. And you might say, well, what's that about? Well, it's the idea that there's an awful lot of people that have some idea that there's something special or changing or happening in the near future. A lot of people are saying, like, oh, gee, it's going to be 2012 or this or that. But they have reasons that are usually not scientifically and or metaphysically explanatory about why these things are going to happen. More about, we'll say, well, this person said or that person said, and or the Mayans said, who are not really that all that spiritual people, by the way. But the important thing to realize here is that there is a lot of behind-the-scenes subconscious issues, as well as some of it's borrowed from people who actually are somewhat scientific and or somewhat metaphysical. Metaphysical can be scientific as well. And so when you look deeper into the reasons or causes for there being potential future events that are going to take place, then the two can be combined, and you can get a real understanding of how come there is some truth to some of the prophecies, but there's also a lot of malarkey. Yeah, both. At least that's my opinion. Now, if you have a different opinion, you can call in. And you can call in, if you're in the U.S., at 877-876-5227. If you're in Canada, try 888-815-9756. Okay, so I would like to start with one of the biggies is that 2012, sometime around, a lot of people say the winter solstice, some people are saying in the fall to the winter, sometime in that time, there's going to be great changes. The Earth may suddenly have an upheaval. There may be some kind of worldwide disaster. There may be the ending of an age of sorts, and a new beginning maybe. A lot of things like that. There are those who say, well, you know, there's going to be changes because there's this alignment that's going to take place related to the planets and us ending, in an astrological sense, a journey around the entire galaxy, like 26,500 or so years running around the galaxy. These sorts of things that all have some kind of connection, but in many different perspectives are not complete in terms of the explanation of why. Let me give you an example. Let's say, and this is true, that if you're into the concept that there's a cycle of our sun moving around our galaxy, and that cycle is completed approximately every 26,500 years or so. As we look at those events taking place, we are coming to that time when we're going through the Piscean aspects and ending that and going into Aquarian, etc. And there's an alignment of certain planets at a certain time, and our sun, possibly with some other stars, that may be connected to what has recently been discovered as a black hole that's in the center of our galaxy. Okay, those are all interesting events, and what does that mean? Does that mean that that black hole is directly affecting us, possibly in a very small, fractional way? The black hole might have some very, very slight effect. The fact of the matter is, even though a black hole of, it's called a super black hole, a black hole of this size could have a very minor effect on us, only from the standpoint that its gravity is enormous as it is. Because it's so very far away, it's like 50,000 light years away from us. That's a lot of light years. That's a lot of distance. The effect is like very, very minimal. Less than the moon, by far, has an effect on the Earth in terms of gravitational fields. But could that, along with alignment of planets at a certain time and date, have an effect in 2012 sometime in the fall, winter solstice, etc. And what would that mean? Well, the interesting thing is, on its own, the answer is, in a purely quote-unquote using physics as we understand it today, probably not. In other words, there's just not enough of an energy effect as it's known today to have an effect. But what if it's more metaphysical, which it is, by the way? What if there's a change in things that of energies that we are generally not aware of in proven science, but in terms of metaphysics, there's a change in the energy that is focused on Earth from star systems that are surrounding us, but not directly in our solar system. And if they are changing their focus, maybe this alignment does have some effect because of an added factor, which is this change in one of the seven types of ray energies that basically build all energy within our system and affect the chakras or centers in every kind of life form that exists. That has an effect then on how life forms grow and how we might sense things around us. Very important, because our awareness actually controls almost everything about our civilization. And as our awareness is changed by a focus on one center over another in its development, then that could have a big long-term effect. And that has been happening. Those of you who are unaware of this, it started about the spring of the year 2000. And you might say, well, okay, so what's been going on since then? Well, specifically, to be exact, the throat center, which is our ability to communicate, build our civilization, it's called the third type of energy, a third ray, some people call it. That type of energy has been developing, we'll say, for about 650 years or more, as a focused center to help us to develop civilization in our world. Before that, it was kind of out of focus, and a different energy was focused on. There's four out of seven focused on it at one time. This third ray energy is actually the most potent as far as Earth is concerned, because Earth kind of vibrates to that frequency of that energy. So when it's in focus, things really get hopping. And in terms of humans, we develop our civilizations more. When it's out of focus, we tend to not do that. So if you go back to the 13th century, we were just starting to get into developing civilization when this ray energy, this energy was in focus for the first time in a long time, and things were hopping, particularly in the Western world. But all over the planet, there was more development of civilizations. But it's also important to understand that this particular energy is affecting all kinds of life forms as long as they have a third ray center, or throat chakra, as some people would call it, within them. Not all life forms do. All humans do. Yeah, we do, because we have every kind. Every type of energy that can be used is found in a human being. A lot of lower life forms only have a few of the energies represented in them, which makes them kind of different from other kinds of life forms. And so we all are being affected by this. Communication, which is a big part of it, has been growing, and it's reaching its pinnacle as this ray is going to be literally declining starting in the fall of the year 2012. And another ray focus called the sacral center, which is a fourth ray energy, will start building up and becoming more dominant. Right now it's growing, but it's still way overshadowed by the rays that are in focus, and the fourth ray is not really enough in focus for us to make much notice about it. The fourth ray gives us inner reflection and a desire to become more balanced in our spiritual side versus our material side. Without its focus in, people, when they're selfish, tend to be extremely material and greedy than spiritual in general. Well, that shouldn't surprise some of us anyway. And so, I hope I'm not losing you all, because whenever I talk about the rays, people go, oh, wow, that's so hard to follow. What are you talking about? Well, you know, I figure if I keep talking about it, it will make some sense over time. But this is what's really going on, in my opinion, in the metaphysical side of things. And it sounds pretty far out there unless you really study it, and then it starts making a lot more sense. It also explains how astrology works, but I don't have time tonight to even touch on how that could have some effect on astrology. The interesting thing is that astrology doesn't make much sense if you don't understand rays, because then there doesn't seem to be any reason why it would work, except that when you do study it, you can say, you know, this stuff really seems real, even though it doesn't make much sense. Okay, so here we go. We've got this ray change going on, and we have this change in, we'll say, the movement of our star, the sun, through our galaxy. We have a change in a lot of other factors all going on at the same time. And some people, the Mayans included and many others, prophesized 2012 as being a big time, maybe the end of 2012, the solstice or whatever, the winter solstice, being the time when all these great things are going to change, and it also coincides with this ray change. And the ray change is a big deal. It's going to have a profound effect on us. It also coincides with cycles in the sun. I made sure I checked some information to be certain of this. But there is the normal solar cycle, which is about 22, 23 years, in which the sun has a lot of sunspots, which means it has a lot more magnetic activity. And then its own poles shift, and the magnetic activity goes to the least amount, and there's a lot less sunspots. We're just coming out of that right now. The year that we come out of it, when there's fewer sunspots, the year following that is usually our coolest year. And the year in which there are the most amount of sunspots is the hottest. The year after that is the hottest year, the seasons after that. So we, as an example, this year, are going to have and did have a very cool year, which is good because global warming is really happening. Unfortunately, some people are saying, there's a year where it got cool, see? Global warming isn't happening. No. All you have to do is just look at the sunspot record, and then you can figure out that there's a science behind this. Now, what does this all mean? How come this stuff is happening the way it's happening? It's because there is a great being that's part of our entire universe that doesn't want our planet to just be destroyed, doesn't want us to not have enough time to make changes, and all these, through its greatness and all the other greater consciousnesses of humans and beyond throughout many billions of planets in our universe, are working together, there is an effect on what we call metaphysics in this world. So basically, these things that are truly connected to a science that is yet to be fully discovered is how our world is being controlled. It's being controlled not to our detriment. No, it's being controlled so that we have more time. We have more of an option, because it was figured out a long time ago that humans were going to be getting in a lot of trouble because we're using up fossil fuels and we're going to tremendously carbonize our atmosphere and raise temperatures. So at a critical junction, we're going to start running out of fuel. You think that's just a coincidence that we're starting to run out of fuel at the time that if we continue to use fuel the rate we've been using it for the last 100 to 150 years, that the planet would be finished in another decade or two? No, that's not an accident. That's an opportunity for us to wake up and also to put the brakes on a little before we destroy the world. And so the prophecy that the world's going to end, I think, is really extreme and wrong. Rather, the world's going to change, and maybe life as we know it on the planet is going to change, and maybe there'll be a lot less life for a while if we go badly in this whole procedure. But I don't think the world itself is necessarily going to end. I think if the world's really going to end, it's going to happen so quickly and suddenly that we're not going to have all these warnings. The warnings are really for the opportunity to change, not to end things. And so the solar changes are also giving us a bit of an opportunity. It sort of buys us a little time, isn't it, that the coolest year of this year, because this is kind of a change year for us. And we need every bit of time we can get to try to be become more conserving in our lifestyle and to generate alternatively energies that are not going to be carbonizing our atmosphere and polluting in other ways, and allowing there to be a return of a more spiritual life that isn't as greedily around fossil fuels, because that's where a lot of the greed is right now. And so this will help. This is all coming together. So the prophecy versus the spiritual timing, which is what I'm trying to bring together here, is a real confrontive issue to us and an opportunity, humanity, to change our civilization instead of using the lower kingdoms to be destructive and to abuse. We start becoming respectful of life, respectful of our Creator, and co-participating in its development rather than just selfishly taking and being destructive to it. A very big difference, I would say. And that's what the spiritual timing is about. If we participate in the spiritual timing, particularly on a conscious level, hopefully I'm going to help some people to do that just by listening to the show, we then can say, wow, there's some real planning that we're involved in, we're co-participating with, in how to save our world. This is a great way to proceed. It includes focusing in on the fourth ray energy, on our sacral centers, and trying to develop some inner reflection, some inner process of how we can become more part of the great events that are taking place around us. First, we have to see that they are great events, and they aren't capricious, they aren't accidental, they are planned. This is a timing thing. This is part of what is supposed to be happening. And it isn't doomsday. Now, that doesn't mean there isn't going to be a loss of life. There already has been. Doesn't mean that a number of species may not become extinct. Many have. Thousands, they say up to 5,000 species of plants and animals are becoming extinct each year. A huge number. And the overall, we'll say, tempo of the thing is going faster. So it's not even just consistently staying there, it's growing. And this is a concern. This is a great concern. Should we be concerned that we might create terrible weather patterns and raise ocean levels and produce climatic catastrophes? Yeah. Should we be concerned about flu shortages, which I've been speaking about for a couple of years, several years? Yeah, because it's happening right now. I mean, we don't have to look to the future for these things. This month, since the beginning of May, which has only been, we're in the ninth day already, and this month there's been a tremendous number of reports of food shortages. Now, it hasn't been necessarily in the United States where I'm speaking from, but in many other parts of the world, there's outcries. And it's important then for us to say, wait, we need to do something. Now, the United States made a goofy mistake. The United States decided to use like a quarter or more of our corn crop to make into ethanol as a fuel, which is a pretty stupid way of doing it, because the amount of energy you get out of the ethanol is almost the same amount of energy as it took to grow the crop in the first place. That includes all the energy required to harvest it and move it around, et cetera, and process it as a fuel. So you don't gain anything from that, and yet we're destroying huge amounts of food that is a resource that if we don't need and use, is used in other places in the country. We're removing that from the market. Consequently, our food prices, not surprisingly, went up 25%. The exact amount of corn is being used to create ethanol. And that's growing every day because of incentives that the government has put in for farmers to grow corn to make ethanol. Now, who came up with that stupid idea? Now, you got to think about this. This is a policy decision that shows a lack of spiritual timing. The people who came up with that decision should not be reelected, not because they made the mistake, but because they're not in tune with spiritual principles, because they couldn't understand it even from a spiritual side, much less from an economic side. This is where we're struggling in our country today, is that if you're in the United States at least, And if you're not, you can understand this because it's happening all over the world. We have some serious problems. Now, I noticed that Estonia, a very small country, used to be on its own up north by the northern European countries, became part of Russia, the Soviet Union, and now it's freed again. But anyway, they enacted a law, a carbon gas tax on keeping cattle. Because cattle make 20 to 22 or 3% of all the methane in the atmosphere, and methane is like a couple dozen times more powerful as a greenhouse gas than is carbon dioxide. So now they're charging a methane tax on those people who raise cattle. Very interesting. Now, whether you think this is crazy or not, it kind of makes sense, but it is pretty radical. I think that the issue here is that they're trying, in their own way, to also limit, in some ways, a damaging issue as far as the atmosphere is concerned. But they aren't looking at the whole big picture, because the real question isn't whether or not you're raising cattle. It's whether or not you're raising enough food. And is cattle the real way to do that? Or is there a more efficient process? And is that process less harmful to the atmosphere at the same time? That would make more sense, probably. At any rate, I think it's important to realize that we have a lot of issues, a lot of problems, and we need to think more spiritually. Spirit meaning about how God thinks. What is the plan for our planet? What makes the most sense to make this place a beautiful world in which there is a balance between spirit and energy itself? And there's a balance between a material side of life and a spiritual one. I'm not talking about a religious now, although certainly it includes people who are religious. But it is one in which it supersedes religion, because it's a basis in which I think every major religion is founded. But it is beyond that, because it's about the universality of seeing life as a part of our own creator and respecting and trying to foster its growth and its development in a way that does more of that for all life at the same time rather than trying to destroy segments of it. It's very important also to reduce forces. You notice how forceful life is becoming through the process of want and not having enough energy, enough food, enough whatever. All of these things are creating forces, and it's the forces that tells us that something's wrong, that we're out of balance with our spiritual side. The more we're in balance, the lower the forces are. So that's like an intuitive and also a sense thing that we can have, that we don't even have to have a mental understanding about if you can feel the forces in your life. And I think a lot of people can. Okay, how do we improve our spiritual time? What can we do to make ourselves more in tune with this part of existence? Well, it would be helpful, it would be even more than helpful, if more people were to reflect on their own life. Make it a personal rather than an external reality. I don't talk about personal that much because I usually think of it as soul. But I think you start with the personal and develop it into a soul by making it responsible to yourself, even if it's your lower self. In other words, if you assume responsibility for everything you do as having an effect on this whole process, then you're becoming more spiritual. You assume responsibility first for everything you do, and then for everything that you have an effect on what others do, both by example and by how much you're giving, how much you're interacting, how much you're giving in an educational sense, how much are you explaining to others, how much you're communicating the importance of what you're trying to do. These things are quite critical to beginning the process of working in the spiritual timing of life. When people do this, they start to feel better. The forces around them seem less daunting. These forces then become opportunities for spiritual service rather than threats to existence. Let me give you an example of that. Let's say that in my particular case, I can concern myself with whether or not I'm going to have enough gasoline, to be able to drive my vehicle in an effective way so that I can earn a living. And I could say, gee, I got to figure out ways so that I'm going to do that because I'm very fearful of not having enough money or I'm going to have trouble finding fuel in the future. These are kinds of the fear side, and that's the material side. That's where the forces grow, and they become obstacles. Instead, I might say, well, gee, looking at this process, I'm going to be very conserving of fuel because that's the best thing for myself and everybody else. I'm going to be looking for opportunities for allowing people to find alternatives to just using gasoline. Maybe there's some other ways of getting rid. And then, besides that, I'm going to get together with others and work on this problem with them instead of keeping it all inside of myself and dealing with the fear which builds more forces in my life. I'm going to get involved. I'm going to get involved because I'm responsible for not just myself in this situation, but for everybody. I'm going to look at all the solutions and see which ones represent to me the best ways to solve all the problems. And then I might see that there's a collective connection that not having enough gas or gasoline is a result of a planned event in which it's slowing down the destruction of the planet. And whether or not I get to work is less critical than whether or not we're going to have a climate and sea levels and other issues that we can all prosper in, and whether there's going to be enough food and shelter, et cetera, for people to exist in. Then I start looking at the big picture, and the forces become opportunities for me to be of service with and to others. Others does not mean just humans. It means all parts of life. I hope that made some sense. I hope it made some sense. But I want you to think about that while we go to break. And I'm going to come back and talk more about this very, I know it's esoteric, very way out there subject. I'll give you some more examples. We'll talk about more tangible parts of it. But I had to cover these very conceptual sides so that at least we know what it is I'm talking about. Hopefully it'll make some sense, or more sense, as I go through it. So we will be back in approximately 2.5 minutes.
What book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for a better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we are talking tonight, dealing with the subject of prophecy versus spiritual timing. And again, I want to make it clear that really what I'm doing is I'm not trying to be disrespectful or, to debug or to say that people are wrong and expose prophecies that are in some way not the same as what I think in terms of the real underlying causes, but to say the opposite, that people are picking up through intuition, through some other parts of metaphysics, parts of what is the spiritual timing of our world. And the prophecies and the things that people are talking about have some truth to them. It's just that the truth that they have is not conceptually complete. And therefore, it's a little misunderstood. And the way people react to them may not be correct, because one thing we don't want to do is to believe that the world's going to end on the winter solstice of 2012 or 2015 or whatever year you got going. You don't want to believe that, because if you do, then you won't respond to the spiritual timing. Because these are opportunities now for us to make changes that are critically needed. And these events have been planned out a long time ago, many, many thousands of years ago. Some people ask me sometimes, well, when did they decide about this ray change? Well, actually, there's a good chance that the ray changes of today were decided between 50 and 100,000 years ago. I don't know the exact answer. I'm just giving you a ballpark. And so that's a long time, and you've got to be a very conscious being if you're going to be making decisions about whole worlds that far ahead of time. In other words, they knew what was going to be going, they being those that are in control of that process, which is really, in a way, you could think about it as being part of God, but a piece of God, not God itself, possibly, but it's involved in all this. And the planning of these shifts in focus of ray energies on our planet, or just energy that is going to be more dominant than other energies, is a critical element in how life is developing in our world. It doesn't mean, by the way, that every planet is so affected. Earth is really affected by it, because Earth, first of all, is a third ray type of world, but more importantly, we're not sacred. What does sacred mean? We don't live our lives and control our world through spiritual thought. We do so through mundane and material thought, if any thought is thought at all. And that, unfortunately, means that instead of these ray changes really being just opportunities, they tend to be forces in our lives. And so we're controlled by evolutionary, using the biological term, evolutionary factors rather than spiritual factors. Let me take that a step further. If we really examine what's taking place to us right at this moment in terms of prophecies versus spiritual timing, we're really like rats in the maze. That's what we are. We are the evolutionary examples of how forceful energies around us are causing us to respond more in a kind of robotish way than we are the spiritual co-creators who are participating and co-creating with opportunities that these changes in energies have, and allow us, instead of being rats in the maze, being the constructors of new, we'll call it puzzles and changes in puzzles, and new solutions to puzzles and mazes rather than trying to be caught into it and being forced to respond to our life. The difference is also in terms of meaning, because meaning comes from creation. And the more co-creation we do with those that are great and greater than we are, and especially to the level of our creator itself, the more meaning we get from life and the more importance it is for us to exist. Whereas the opposite is true when we are evolutionary. When we are evolutionary, we have a life that is in constant freefall in terms of losing meaning. It's as though we are just going through the motions. And that's a real detriment and a real suffering or painful experience for humanity. And, of course, it causes us to change, but in a very hostile way. I would like our lives, all of us, humans and all other life forms, to be non-competitive and non-destructive and to allow us to co-create together. Now, you could say, but I'm a capitalist, and I think competition is great because it causes people to then excel. Well, let me put it like this. Competition is actually an outgrowth of evolutionary thought and evolutionary action. If you want to compete in a sense where you wish for either you or whoever you're competing against to grow as a result, and it doesn't matter to you whether you win or lose or someone else does, then that, if you call it competition, is a significant spiritual event. But if all of the purpose of competition is for only one person, usually the one who is winning the competition, to be victorious, then the results are always forceful and negative. And that's true also in the form of capitalism. It's one of the reasons that some people rejected capitalism and became communist or socialist, etc., because capitalism has as its negative side this process of there being a zero-sum game. But it doesn't have to be. As a matter of fact, as capitalism is oftentimes presented, it can be the opposite. It can be a win-win situation. But that's only when we are all, or mostly all, working together for the betterment of the good of all, rather than just individuals. It's very important to get that, because it's a hard one to understand. Many people plan their lives based upon a selfish objective and motive, whether it's for business purposes or it's for whatever, self-aggrandizement. But the results of that invariably are a life with less meaning. And so the people who claim to be, you know, I'm so competitive, I just want to win, 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 in their later times in life, oftentimes do not have the greatest joy, do not have great meaning. They may even be despondent. Whereas those that want to share and grow together, and the only thing they're competing with or will say against is their own growth and the development and growth in others. They want everyone to grow from the process that they are involved in. Those people, if you want to call that competition, are the ones who are vastly improving their spiritual side, growing in unique ways. That is the new paradigm for a capitalistic world. I don't want to throw away capitalism. I'm saying that capitalism needs to evolve just as literally all other sides of life needs to evolve. And so capitalism has to change from a very selfish seventh-ray approach, some people may call it that, to a very enlightened one in which the process is only developed as it is extended and grown for the benefit of all those who are participating and even those who choose not to participate within it. This is a great process, and it's not communism. The process of communism says that basically there shall be no competition. Rather, people just get as they need. instead of as they create. And that's also a very difficult model because it doesn't provide within it the opportunity to encourage others to be creative. It kind of tramples on creation and dumbs down people, making them into nothing. And especially when it's been applied in cruel ways, such as was done in the Soviet Union and Red China. In those circumstances, people have absolutely no motivation to become creative, and they aren't rewarded in any sense of the word, but beyond that, they don't feel as though they are part of the betterment of other people's creativity, only that others have what they need. Well, having your needs met is far from having your needs to be creative met. Is that far out there? I guess so. All right. So we need to change our economy. We need to change the way we structure our very existence. And all this is coming. It's coming after the year 2012, because what's going to take place is more and more the things that I'm saying to you, these really complex, difficult concepts, are going to become ways that people understand and live rather than just hearing me talk about them on the radio. And people will start saying, you know what, this is the new way I want to have a business. This is the new way I want to do this or that thing. I want this to be a co-creation for the betterment of all, and that makes my life most meaningful. That makes things the greatest. Instead of I just going to have more money, I'm just going to make more, I'm going to have more, going to spend more, going to feel more powerful myself, that doesn't do anything. Because in the long run, that's a declining and destructive process that leads to a lack of meaning and increased forces. Forces are the result of not seeing yourself as part of one and all. Forces is what you get from doing that. It's the karmic response of the universe. Now, I know that sounds terrible, maybe even judgmental, but unfortunately, I'm just reporting this to you based upon my opinion. It's not my desire that that is the case, although I think it isn't necessarily a bad model, but it is the way the universe appears to function. And it's a really rational understanding, because it's so plainly apparent from my perspective. It may not be. If you think differently, give me a call. Hey, I'm right here. You can talk about what you might think differently. You know, but if we're going to really make a difference, we've got to start looking at these, we'll call them new paradigms. We need to start changing the process and move to a different perspective than the old perspectives that we have had. This is going to start taking place from the year 2013 on and progress to about the year 2025, in which case we will see the fruits of this change in our society. Those of us who are able to make the shift will probably have a much more meaningful life. Those of us who resist it may succumb to a destruction to inner lives and a very ugly kind of suffering. It's not that the universe wants to crush us or punish us. It's that the forces are really created through our own thoughts and actions. And only those who really understand that are going to probably benefit from it. But others who don't will benefit in the future, but they won't immediately benefit in the present because they will be caught in the forces and the suffering. Now, is that a terrible thing? Does that sound like another biblical prophecy, you know, like the second coming and, the revelation and, the ecstasy and all these things? Not really. Because this is not based upon some kind of fantasy or some kind of, we'll call it, almost a punishing God. This is based upon how the universe causes life to grow and helps life to grow. And it is not meant to be a punishment, but rather to be and encouragement for the most obstinate parts of life that are not changing. So in other words, those that suffer out of the results are those that have decided that they don't want to be co-creating with the Creator. They're going to fight it. They'll prove something else. You know, I'm going to do it this way. What the heck? It's my own way. Okay, you have that choice, because the first thing that the Creator created was freedom. We have the freedom to say, hey, you know what? I'm doing it my way. I'm going to create forces, and I'll have a meaningless life, and I'll be despondent, and terrible things are going to happen, and the world's going to be miserable. Okay, go ahead, because you have the freedom to do that. But we also share a world. So some of us will go into a different direction. And those of us that go into that different direction will allow the world the ability to become better. It doesn't mean better in an immediate sense, because a lot of life may be lost. I'm hoping this isn't going to happen. But there's a possibility we could lose billions of lives, both in human and other kinds of life forms. There could be a tremendous, we'll call it, lessening of life in the whole world. The entire ecosystem might be reduced to a very small level in comparison to today if things go badly in this process. That's what this particular shift in energy focus can cause. But it's not that terrible in comparison to allowing things to keep growing in a dark sense, because then you'll have more life, but it will be life that's increasingly hostile to other life. And that's not good. You see, there's a balance in the spiritual timing. There's a reason for the spiritual timing. To limit the growth of darkness, to improve the chances of a planet like ours, which is not sacred and is very hostile in many respects, to becoming a kinder, gentler place, one in which all of us can enjoy the fruits of becoming more spiritual in our lives on a daily basis. And that's a critical element, being aware on a daily basis of what we're really here for and trying to resist the change aspect of moving into a more selfish mode, a more fearful mode, as things get worse. Every one of us is going to be tested, I guarantee it. It's not just for some, it's for everybody. We're all going to be facing things like fuel shortages, food shortages, terrible catastrophes and events that seem to be irrational even, and the fear of prophecies made by those of us in the past who did not fully understand and may have produced a doom and gloom so outrageous that we may start believing those things. Don't, because that is another crap. We can make the difference. We can make the changes. We can not respond with fear, but with creation. Creation that has with it light and God's own thought. Producing virtue within all of us that will become the hallmark of who and what we are. Every one of us has this opportunity, and we should not in any way disregard it or throw it away. The spiritual timing is critical, and it's now. There's no time to waste on it, because those who wait, we could get caught in the whirlwind of the negative side. And there's going to be, unfortunately, this polarization taking place in which one side is going to say there is no such thing as global warming, why the oceans rise around them. And they'll also say, we've got to have more of this or that because we've got to have it. We have a right to have it. It's our right to be whatever we want. We're going to get it without being concerned about the planet in general, without being concerned about the rights of others, without being concerned about the freedom to help others to become more creative. These are the things that we're going to be facing and we are facing right now. Let me go year by year so that I can be more specific. I don't have a lot of time here. This year, the remainder of this year, we're going to be facing, for the first time probably, whether or not we're going to make these changes in our life. It will remain for one more year. That'll be about 2000, in the middle to the end of the 2009. And Then, those who have not chosen to make any changes and have become more adamant will start suffering terrible consequences. What will those consequences be? It's specific to the ways that they have created the forces in their life. It'll be one of seven types of consequences. I don't have time to name them right now. I'm looking at the clock. Okay, I'll go into them another time. But there will be one of seven types of very serious consequences that each person will have. Then, beginning about the end of 2009 to 2010, people will, in terms of spiritual timing, need to have been, for that year, creating a specific alternative in their life that is, again, one of seven focuses, but it must involve others. It cannot be specifically and completely individual. This is going to be the needed change. Those people are going to have to work together, at least with a couple other people, in order to achieve the goals that I'm talking about. 2011 to 2012 is going to require that the spiritual alternatives that people have chosen start becoming part of a more national system in whatever country they're in. It could be several countries together, by the way. And those countries need to be working for a overall solution to one of the seven major problems that the world is going to be facing. And then the next part of the process is that from 2012 to 2013, it's my opinion that we're going to need as a world to be facing a global solution to the entire problems, set of problems that the world will be facing. And there will be seven elements of these problems. And each individual that has already chosen that path will be contributing a significant portion of their daily life to some element of that, if they're on that path of spiritual co-creation. That's what we need to do. This sounds almost impossible, I realize. A lot of people are saying, oh, that can't happen that fast. There's no way. Well, it can if things get bad, and I think they're going to get bad. Because those that choose not to do these things, there's equal steps that are going to be taking place in their lives. They're going to create greater and greater conflict. The conflicts are going to hit them in seven specific ways, one of seven specific ways, and will involve them in a process of less meaning, more disability in every function, including illness, and great catastrophes. These catastrophes are not going to be the biblical things of complete destruction. They're going to be more centralized around the areas of people's lives as they have made decisions to live their lives that bring about some of the very elements that of the cause. It isn't going to be just a, you know, like a comet coming in and destroying the world. That's certainly an option, but it's not an option, in my opinion, before 2012. What is more likely going to happen is that people collectively, through their selfishness, those that have not gone through the spiritual side, will be focusing in on an element of that selfishness that will lead them towards a catastrophic element that disables their life. It can be anything from a certain kind of illness to a specific area of economic destruction or a potential problem that deals with legal and governmental issues. It's going to be a lot of specific things, but people are going to categorize themselves by their collective selfish aspects. I am running out of time. I don't have enough time to explain more about this, but I will in another program, I promise. This Sunday, listen to 1170 AM in the northeastern part of the U.S., Practical Ways of Developing More Consciousness. That's what I'm going to be talking about from 4 to 5 Eastern Daylight Time. So tune in, and if you're not in that area, WDISAM.com, anywhere in the world, listen to that. And if you have that opportunity, see how it fits in with some of the things that I said tonight. Also, Mimi's going to be talking about reincarnation, and that's on May 19th over at Glendale Borders Books and Music from 7 to 8:15 p.m. So please tune in to that. Hopefully tonight's show has made some sense to you. It was a little bit on the abstract side, I know, but that's the only way I could talk about a subject as deep and esoteric as this one. in a future show, maybe not next week, I'll go into the specifics more and talk about these seven different ways and what they all mean and how we can be more co-creative in seven different ways and how we can also be very destructive to ourselves and others in seven different ways. But for right now, I hope this has made some sense to all of you. I'll await hearing any emails or whatever else you would like to send me. And until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.